Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Krishna gave that teaching in the Bhagavad Gita. And I just, for those who are non-Indians, non-Hindus in here, I just want to let you know that the Bhagavad Gita is a scripture that has been extolled enthusiastically by scholars and philosophers of every religious tradition from all across the world. This is it's not a Hindu teaching or an Indian teaching. It's a teaching about how to play your role in the world and what does it all mean. And it's something, again, I wish I had the names and the stories in my mind of who had said what. But if you go online and you literally, you know, Google quotes on the Bhagavad Gita by Western scholars or something like that, you'll come up with dozens of them, of how the Gita gives the answer. So I just want to clarify that this is not about religion. This is about a way of life that is applicable to all and pertains to all and is beneficial for all. And he gives the answer to your question in it, which is, be a tool in my hands. Be a tool. Which is the exact same prayer spoken from the other way. Krishna's given it from the perspective of God, but it's the same prayer, if you look at it from the perspective of the devotee, that Saint Francis of Assisi prayed for. O Lord, make me an instrument of thy mercy. Right? So same teaching. Be a tool, make me a tool, make me an instrument. And there's one thing that's very important when we speak about tools and instruments. Nobody cares if they're made out of gold or covered with diamonds. It's utterly irrelevant. All that matters is their effectiveness. If I said to you, all right, I've got two hammers I can sell you. One of them is it's made of gold. It's beautiful. It's covered with diamonds. It's the prettiest hammer you've ever seen. But the end of it isn't actually flat, unfortunately, because, you know, with the diamonds and things like that, so we couldn't really get it flat. There's so many diamonds sticking on it. And so when you actually go to hammer anything, it can't actually hammer the nail in because there's no flat edge. Alternatively, I've got this other hammer that is, you know, it's made of metal or lead or whatever hammers are made of, and it's old and it's kind of rusty and it's not beautiful at all. Which would you like? Well, if you've got a nail that needs to be hammered, everybody's going to choose the second one. Unless your goal is to just take that hammer and stick it up on display on your wall. If you want it as a tool, not an art piece, it needs to be effective. And so as tools, as instruments, we have one duty and one duty only, which is be effective. It's not about be beautiful. It's not about be decorated. It's about be effective. And so he gives that teaching is be a tool in my hands, meaning do not think, because of course Arjun's job that he was given was fight this war, kill. Not an easy job to be given. Especially when you're a good man. But Krishna's teaching is, you're a tool in my hands. You're not the giver of life or the taker of life. Get off your high horse. Who do you think you are? Really? You can take life? You're that powerful? Get off the high horse. You don't give life. You can't take life. At best, you're going to be a tool in my hands. That's the highest thing you get to aim for in life, and this is true for all of us. Our highest aim is a tool in the hands of the divine, which is why what we keep emphasizing over and over again is the connection to self, so that you know how you're supposed to be used. Because if you say to me, all right, give me a cookie cutter answer, how should tools be used? Well, it depends what the tool is. A hammer's job is very different from a chisel, which is very different from a saw. And of course, they're needed at different times in different ways. If you've got a nail in the wall, you need a hammer. If you've got a board that needs to be split, you need a saw. I don't even know what a chisel does, but I'm sure it does something effective. But when you have different needs, different tools are required. So our duty is to be effective and to be humble enough to be used by the divine. And the last part that Krishna reminds us is surrender. Surrender to me. Again, get off your high horse. This isn't about you. Because Arjuna, of course, then worries, well, what about my karma? My God, I'm going to, you know, come back to earth in my next life or something really horrible. I cannot imagine a worse karmic fate than one who has killed his own family members. And the answer to that is, when it's about you, when you are the doer, you are the receiver of that karma. When you surrender, and this goes back to the story Pooja Swamiji told about Dada Vaswani on the Ghat. I was also listening. If I sat before you and I started swearing profanity or doing like racial slurs or all sorts of really horrendously violent, inappropriate things, and then I walked away, no one would come up and pick up this microphone and go, bad microphone, bad microphone. Right? Somebody lock that microphone up. We all understand intuitively that the mic is just a tool. It's not going to suffer the bad karma for what I have spoken through it. That's me. Now, that's taken us to kind of a different level that before we end, I do want to bring back just more specifically to what we've been talking about. But that's the teaching that Krishna gives, is surrender so fully to me. That's the only way to break this cycle of karma. Good karma, bad karma. If I sit here and I give a wonderful satsang and I inspire you and touch you up, you could say, well, that's good karma I'm going to get, not the mic. Me, right, as the speaker. Well, that's the same problem. I'm no more the speaker than the mic is the speaker. I'm being used as an instrument like the mic is being used as an instrument. But as long as I think it's about me, that's where we get stuck. Now, just in conclusion, because I do, you all have dinner and then an evening program, and I know we could do this all night, but I want to be mindful of time, is Very specifically, with regard to the authentic self and leadership and what that part of this discussion means in the world, is Arjun begins the Bhagavad Gita by saying, "This is too tough. I can't do this. Forget it." Duryodhan, his cousin, and his family were ruling an entire kingdom through a dharma, unrighteousness, darkness. Light needed to be restored to the darkness. Arjun, for the karmic package, was selected for the task. He says, "Forget it. I'm not going to do it. Too difficult, too scary. I don't want the karma. I don't want any of this. I'm going off to the mountains." And what the Bhagavad Gita is about is the importance of doing your duty courageously. And for all of you, you've been put here. We've all been put here with our own dharma, with our own purpose. And sometimes it feels scary. Sometimes it feels too big. Sometimes it feels too small. But the importance of the message is the only way for your fulfillment, for your joy, for your peace, for your liberation, or whatever your highest goal is through fulfilling this duty with sincerity. That is what you are called upon to do. And it's not always glamorous. And it doesn't always feel good. It certainly didn't feel good to Arjun. It wasn't glamorous for him. But there's roles in our life that we are called upon to play for dharma, for light, for truth. I mean, think about it on a different level. You get sick. You've got a horrendous bronchial infection. The doctor gives you a bunch of antibiotics. Well, on a very light level, that's violence. I mean, think of all the bacteria you're killing in your body every time you take an antibiotic. Those are life. But what we recognize is the importance of us moving on so that we can fulfill what we have been put on earth to fulfill. And if I need to take some antibiotics to do it, you take antibiotics to do it. Now, of course, this is not by any means a condoning of violence at all. The path that is needed today is the path of what we call the peaceful warrior. We have enough violence. We have enough people thinking they're killing in the name of light, thinking they're killing in the name of dharma. We don't need more of that. What our world needs today are warriors of light, warriors of peace, who are prepared to stand as light, as peace, as compassion, as oneness, as spirit in a world that is fighting in the other direction, in a world that is fighting for separation, fighting for greed, fighting for all of that, fighting for us to utilize the world in a way that we lose it in just a couple generations, and to stand as beacons of peace, of oneness, of spirit. Those are the warriors that today needed. The warriors at the time of the Mahabharat needed something different. Our Duryodhan today, the one bringing the adharma who needs to be vanquished today is greed and separation. That's the war we need to fight, is a war against greed and a war against separation. And it's fought not by killing people, but by killing our own darkness, our own ignorance, our own belief in separation, our own egos, our own fears. That's the war that needs to be fought today. His father, and we'll conclude here, but I can't resist just bringing the last metaphor in. His father, of course, was blind, right? It was the blind king, literally blind, due to whose legacy the whole war happened, the whole adharma, lack of righteousness, lack of integrity, darkness came. The vanquisher of blindness is sight. The vanquisher of darkness is light. And so that which we are being called upon today, because today the blindness is not in one person who's the father of one king who's bringing about evil, but it's the blindness of the truth of our connection to each other, our connection to planet Earth, our connection to the unborn children of tomorrow. And as long as we allow that blind king to lead our lives, we lose the battle. And the earth as well. As warriors today, it's about how can we find the sight and bring the sight? How can we be the light and bring the light? And that's what's needed today.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit RAIN.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Life, yes, has been created by a divine power. But that which happens in life is happening due to the law of karma. And so a lot of times people think, oh, I've been so showered with, you know, grace. My child got into Harvard. Oh, I've been so showered with grace. I got, you know, the post of CEO. Grace is not bestowing CEOships. Grace is not worried about where you go to college. This is all the result of karma, which, by the way, is not the equivalent of just hard work. There's plenty of people who work very hard who don't become the CEO, who don't get into Harvard. The law of karma is intricate and complex, but it's not about God sitting up there deciding who gets into Harvard, who doesn't. who becomes the CEO, who doesn't. So the divine power is that which gives life, that has created us as we are. When grace flows in your life, it gives you a prosperity that has nothing to do with how much money you have. The abundance that comes from grace is an inner experience of my cup runneth over. It has nothing to do with what's in your bank account. There are plenty of people who are multi-millionaire billionaires, but who don't feel full. And there are plenty of people, if you doubt this, just walk into the market here, walk through the ashram, meet the poor people of India, who have almost nothing, but who live in such an experience of inner abundance that all they want to do is share. All they want to do is feed you. Oh, you've come to visit. Come home. They want something. Come for a meal. Come for a cold drink. Come for a cup of tea. That's abundance. So when grace is in your life, when we talk about grace bestowing prosperity, it's not you meditate, you connect to grace, you open your eyes, and there's a mound of money or a letter from, you know, J.P. Morgan that says, could you please become our new president or something. You meditate, you connect to grace, you open your eyes, and that which is before you is so full and so beautiful that you cannot believe you deserve it. And all you want to do is share. So that's where the divine power comes in. The aspect of that which is determined, well, this is the law of karma. I plant an apple seed, I'm going to get an apple tree. Assuming that that karmic thread of my apple seed weaves into the global karmic thread in an appropriate way that bears an apple tree. So for example, if I plant an apple seed in the wrong season, right before, you know, the frost of winter, well, that seed's going to die. If I plant an apple seed in the wrong place and it doesn't get any sun, and it's going to die. So my thread of planting an apple seed that bears an apple tree is also intricately woven with so many other threads of so many other karmic packages. So you are, if you talk about what's predetermined, well, the fact that you were going to be here right now was predetermined. That's why you're here. I don't mean predetermined as in before you died, somebody said you're going to be here on this date. Pre meaning everything up to this moment. So you got yourself to India. If you're not from India, you got yourself to Rishikesh. You got yourself to this ashram, or you got yourself to a program that was taking place in this ashram. Then you got yourself into satsang in the pouring rain. All of those things add up to predetermine, pre being prior to the moment that you're sitting here, that you're going to be sitting here. Where you're going to be tomorrow is based on what you do today. It's predetermined only insofar as what my traits are, what my habits are. Chances are, if I fell asleep in a drunken stupor tonight, there's a good chance I'm going to fall asleep in a drunken stupor tomorrow night. Not because it was predetermined, but if I simply told you this is how I fell asleep tonight, well, you would assume, okay, well, here's some traits of hers. Here's some habits of hers. It's a pretty good bet. Chances are she's going to be in a drunken stupor again tomorrow, or at least next week. Not because it was predetermined from some other time, but because every time I fall asleep in a drunken stupor, I'm more likely to fall asleep in a drunken stupor again. I'm laying whether you call them sanskaras or whether you call them neural networks. Same thing. Patterns. Energetic patterns of who we are and how we live. And that's what determines our future. You chose to be here. You're not in a bar. You're not in a club. You're here. Here in the ashram, here in Rishikesh, here in satsang. That is laying a sanskara, a pathway. That as your life goes on, you're more likely to choose things that may not necessarily be the most immediately fun. The vast majority of you came in here soaking wet. Sitting in soaking wet clothes for an hour is not always so much fun. But you made a decision that said, I'd rather sit in soaking clothes because the benefit to me in my life of being here is more than the discomfort I'm going to feel for the 15 or 20 minutes it's going to take my clothes to dry. And that's laid a pattern that now as you move in your life, I mean, chances are there were a pattern before this. That's why you made this choice. And being here has strengthened that pattern. As you go, you're going to be more likely to make decisions for a long-term deep gain than an immediate comfort. That's going to create an entirely different life package for you than the other way. So this is how that works.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. Huh. The power of ritual and the power of getting into the subconscious is something that can't be overstated. On the other hand, I don't want to prescribe certain rituals because so many people come from so many different walks of life that I don't want to come in and say, this is the ritual, because if that's not a ritual that you feel comfortable with, I don't want people to feel like, oh, well, I can't do it then. But what is important is to know that when we're carrying things, we're frequently carrying them in our subconscious and our unconscious minds. That's why they're patterns. We react. And a lot of times we don't even know why we react. Something happens. Someone says something. We're in a situation. And we react. And we don't even know what it is that's triggered because we're not even that deeply in touch. Chanting this in our conscious mind eventually, chant it enough, it'll get into the subconscious. This is the power of repetition. So you can get there. But it really takes a lot of repetitions. This is when people, you know, talk about affirmations and just reminding yourself over and over and over again to the point where it's not your conscious mind saying, oh, yeah, I let go, I am free. It literally becomes a subconscious teaching within the self. Because we have to get from the conscious to the subconscious in order to be able to impact it. Otherwise, you're shouting at, you know, somebody that's across a 5-inch thick glass wall from you and can't hear you or speaks a different language than you. But if you really repeat it enough, it'll absolutely sink in. On the other hand, if you have a practice that allows for ritual, and rituals can be anything. Rituals don't necessarily have to be things prescribed by our scriptures. I know in the Hindu tradition, we have our yajna, our fire ceremony, which is something that we give to. We give all of that within us, which is blocking us. And of course, it doesn't have to be religious. We do it very, very frequently in ways that aren't religious. For people of every religion, of every walk of life. It's our swaha ceremony that's just giving of that which is holding me back in any way, that which is blocking me in any way, into the fire. So it's a very, very powerful ritual. If you believe in Mother Ganga as the purifier, give it to Ganga. But if you can have a ritual, it can be a made-up ritual, literally. But something that is deeply meaningful to you, maybe there is a symbol of that person, of that act, of what happened, burn it. Literally, burn it. And as you burn it, chant to yourself, I let go, I am free. I let go, I am free. If it's biodegradable, bury it. Give it back to the earth with the awareness that Mother Earth is going to hold it, hold you, sustain you. There's an infinite number of rituals that we can come up with. You'll know what feels right to you. But even if you don't have a ritual, the power of that repetitive chanting absolutely goes from the conscious into the subconscious and it starts to chant itself. This is how we got indoctrinated in the first place. Nobody took a, you know, syringe and injected not enoughness into our veins. We heard it over and over and over again. And eventually we believed it. So you have to change the programming. There's also practices of hypnosis. There's practices of techniques called Psych K, for example, that has to do with brain balance. I mean, there's all sorts of different ways to get at the subconscious. But what's most important is that you're ready to do it. The minute you decide, I'm ready to let go, create a ritual, it'll happen. But until and unless you're ready to let go, you can have all the rituals in the world, and it's not going to happen. We need to be prepared. And the last important part of this is we need to ask ourselves, well, who would I be if I weren't an alcoholic, if I weren't the child of an alcoholic, if I hadn't been abused, if I weren't discriminated against, if I weren't... what's the part of my identity that I've become so comfortable with? Well, if I let it go, there's a whole new plate of my life I need to step up to. And that's scary sometimes. And sometimes it's a lot safer to stay stuck. Because at least we know that, and it gives us a reason why I'm not stepping up to the plate of my life, why I'm not opening my heart with courage, why I'm stressed, why I'm not able to love and trust, why I'm not able to let the divine in. I've got a reason. Well, because you know I was abused, and when you're abused, you don't trust. I mean, you've got a story. And now you're excused from this whole element of life. So in order to let go, we have to be prepared to sort of step into that unknownness with faith that the truth of really who I am will emerge. And I don't need to hold on to these identities that have been given to me by things that have happened or people who meant well but didn't come through quite so well. And be able to move into that.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. It has been said that spiritual growth and finding inner peace is the highest form of service we can offer the world. How can we find the right balance between the silence and solitude that is so often conducive to spiritual progress and interacting in the physical world? So first of all, it's really important to realize that these two things are not actually meant to be separate and distinct. It's like saying, so in order for my body to work, I need to breathe, and I need to sleep, and I need to digest my food. So how do I balance those things? Like, how do I make sure that I have time for digestion? And how do I make sure I have time for breathing? And how do I make sure that I have time for all of my endocrine systems to function? Well, when the system of the body is functioning healthfully, they actually all happen at the same time. Now, there may be certain times of the day when one is predominant. So when you're sleeping, sleep is predominant. Although that also tends to be a time in which digestion also is going very well and the endocrine system is going very well and repair is going on. And then there are times, for example, maybe you're practicing pranayama or you're doing some deep breathing or you're meditating on the breath in which most of your awareness is on your breath. So that's going to be a focus at that time. But ultimately, all of the systems should be going together. And this is the same thing with our spiritual path. It's not one or the other. The silence that we look for is a silence that stays with us even while we're interacting in the world. Ultimately, the goal, and Pooja Swamiji speaks about it so beautifully and in such short, sweet ways of understanding, he speaks about being noiseless amidst the noise. So it's not how do I push away the noise, but it's how do I become noiseless in the noise? How do I become silent inside? Because anybody who's ever tried to practice silence, whether as a spiritual practice in and of itself, or whether simply so that you can meditate. Because obviously in order to meditate, one of the first things you have to do is close your mouth. Close the eyes. What we find is that simply closing our mouth is not actually enough to bring us silence. The mind then goes. You could be in the quietest place in the world and unable to find peace. In fact, one of my favorite things to share is something that happens here so frequently because Rishikesh, as you may have known, discovered is it's a bustling little or large spiritual hub. And I'll have people come who will say, God, you know, it's so loud here. I can't meditate. And especially if they come during times of year when we have, you know, these glorious spiritual programs that are going on morning till evening. It's so loud, I can't meditate. Or, you know, I've got one of the VIP rooms overlooking the Ganga and the view is beautiful, but oh my God, it's so loud, the people outside. And I'll say to them, well, where are you from? And they say things like Maine, or New Hampshire, or the countryside of England, or, you know, places that have a population less than this room for the state. Rishikesh has more yoga studios than those cities have people. So I say, so wait, you've come from Maine to India, looking for quiet. If you can't meditate in the silence of where you live, if you can't meditate somewhere that has 5 or 10 people per square kilometer, clearly the problem is not outside. And what India gives us in all of its hustle and bustle, in the fact that there really is nowhere you can go, I mean, go up, up, up in the mountains, and you're going to find people. You're going to find villages. You're going to find yatris. You're going to find hustle and bustle. And what India offers us is the opportunity to find that noiselessness amidst the noise. Because when you learn to meditate in India, you can take that back And whether it's the quiet of Maine or New Hampshire or the south of England, or whether it's a subway in Manhattan, that then stays with you. And so when we look at our spiritual practice, we really need both, but we need them not as separate boxes. The silence that we practice internally is meant to stay with us. And so, yes, it's a very important and wonderful practice. And whether you practice it a certain amount of time per day, like Puja Swamiji does, whether you practice it a certain number of days or weeks in a year, whether you do it a day a week, whether you do it at the turn of seasons, whether you do it on Ekadashi. I mean, people have all sorts of different personal practices of when they observe silence. But the point of that silence is for me to be able to then go into the world and carry the silence with me. It's not about now I'm interacting in the world and then I have my silence time. The silence is within, and the silence grounds us so that we can be vessels and vehicles, tools of the divine on earth. Because that's the point. The point of the peace, the point of the enlightenment is not in a vacuum. It's not my peace, my bliss, my enlightenment, I'm done, let everybody else suffer and go to hell. That's not the highest spiritual goal. My peace, my bliss, my enlightenment, so that I can then be a clear vehicle for God's will to flow through me. So that when I move through the world, I'm not moving from a place of ego. I'm not moving from a place of judgment or criticism or competition. It's not what I want, how I want it. Where's my name? Where am I? Where's it? It's not about that. It's about me as an instrument, me as a tool. I'll tell you a personal story about this. When I was taking sannyas, which is the official ordination or initiation into a monastic life, the life of wearing the orange robes, the life of being a sannyasi. When I was going to take this, I was very, very blessed because I was given sannyas by Puja Swamiji, my guru, and another very amazingly divine, holy, revered saint of India. And he's from Mathura, near Vrindavan, the land of Krishna. And he's someone whose life is really dedicated to the monastic process. And he has dozens, if not hundreds, of people he has initiated into this order. And so when I was getting ready for it, I said to Puja Swamiji, so what are all the things that I need to do? And Puja Swamiji said, go and talk to Maharaji, and he will tell you. This is what he does so frequently. So now it's important to mention that he is very, very traditional, very rooted in the letter of the law as well as the spirit of the law, the absolute most traditional, disciplined ways of what the scriptures say, what the religion has, what the Dharma is, all of this. So I go and I sit with him and I say, Maharaji, tell me what to do. We've got 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, whatever it was before I'm going to have this. What are all the things I need to do in preparation? So he says to me, for the week before the ceremony, you need to observe fast You can eat just fruits and milk. And he said, and you need to mostly stay in your room. Observe silence. Just do your japa, do your meditation. Don't come out, you know, except when, if it's essential, but otherwise stay in your room. And I said, okay. And he said, now repeat back to me. And I said, okay, I'm going to mostly stay in my room, do my meditation, do my japa, not come out. And he stops me, he interrupts. He says, unless Pooja Swamiji has anything for you to do, at which point you will show up immediately and you will do whatever is required. And I said, okay. And I said, and I will mostly observe silence. And he says, unless Pooja Swamiji asks you something or needs you to speak, at which point you will not even think of playing a game of charades and making him guess what you're trying to say. You will speak. I said, and I will observe fast. I'll just have fruits and milk. And he says, unless that diet makes you too weak to do whatever Pooja Swamiji tells you to do, at which point you will have a full meal immediately. And what I love about that story, it's now been 18 years, is from one who is so deeply rooted in the letter of the law, the teachings, the dharma, the here's how it has to be. But when you're enlightened, the truth overpowers and comes through everything. And the truth is all of that, the silence, the meditation, the being alone, is all to make you this clear vehicle for God's work. It's not instead of God's work. And so there should never be a time, even when you're in the most intense sadhana in preparation for this rite of initiation that he himself was personally coming to do. There's not a moment in which that should supersede the opportunity to be of service. And so this for me is the teaching of where the two come together, is yeah, observe silence, unless of course you are needed to speak. And that doesn't just mean in the 1 hour or 2 hours or one day or whatever amount of time you've dedicated for silence. It means all the time. Observe silence. Stop the unnecessary chatter. Stop the gossip. Observe silence as much as you can all the time. And speak when necessary. And do as much meditation and japa as you can, unless there is something required of you in service. Don't waste the energies of the body in unnecessary things. Fill them with your spiritual practice. And when there is work, when there is service, you use it. And you eat as lightly as you can. Doesn't have to always be just fruit and milk, but as lightly as you can. Unless that makes you too weak to do what you need to do, at which point you add in just as much as is necessary to keep the body. So this for me has been a guiding principle, not just of that week, but a guiding principle of my whole life. how these two things go together. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.